Hello! Welcome to DreamStacks, the developer podcast that feeds your mind and your soul. DreamStacks is brought to you by Contentful and Algolia. So, get comfortable, grab a cup of tea or a glass of lemonade, and join us for this episode. Enjoy your time!
Cool. Okay, thank you so much. All right, great. Yeah, all right. Well, it's so exciting to be here today with Sarah and Julie. And me and Sarah Dayan are going to talk about state machines on the front end today. And I don't know a ton about state machines. I'm really fascinated and went through a big Google, hole yesterday, just researching, you know, the history of them. I'm obviously, all of us are like huge math nerds, and I also really love concepts of philosophy and math. And so I went nuts. I had a great time researching this, but I don't know a ton about it. And I would love for you, Sarah, to give us a little bit of an overview of what is a state machine and what is a state machine on the front end.
Yeah, sure. So state machines, it's like this old mathematical model that allows you to represent finite states. So what is states? What does finite mean? So state, like anything as a state, any kind of device that you use, it's on or it's off. A CD player, it's playing the song number one, number two, it's in pause, it's in play, etc. State is everywhere in every kind of device or system that we use every day. And so basically you have different kinds of states, but those states that I'm talking about are finite. You have a limited amount of possible states, and those states, you know them in advance. And there is the concept of some of them can be like they are parallel. They are, you can have something that is in two states at the same time, but they don't have any like links, or you have things that cannot be in the same, in two states at the same time. Like, let's go with the CD player. A CD player can be on the song number one, like on the first track, and it can be on pause. That is possible. But you cannot be on play and on pause at the same time. And those, like, those issues, those problems, those this model is something that you have everywhere, including on the front end. When you have a web application, for example, the best example of state is, oh, you're fetching data. So you arrive on a page like users. And when you arrive on that page, we're going to start loading the users. So your page is in a loading state. And once you retrieve those users, you're no longer in a loading state. Now you're in a view state because you have the data. And so you're no longer in loading, you're in loaded. And so you should never be in loading and loaded at the same time. That cannot happen. And what you're usually going to do on the front end is that you're going to do your own little system hack together with some Booleans, with some custom logic. And most of the time with simple cases, that's fine. But as your application grows, you start to have a lot more things in it. Like, you can have a panel that can be open, but when it's open, you should be able to do that. But when it's closed, you should not be able to do that action, etc. So you have a bunch of states that are interdependent. And the problem is that when you don't have a proper representation for that, for all those relationships of states, it's super easy to mess it up and to be in inconsistent states.
Totally. I feel like I've been there a lot of times, especially early like jQuery days. I feel like, you know, a lot of event listeners and, you know, I've created some disastrous interactivity, especially with UI in some of my early projects. So, you know, are there people that are using state machines and may not know it? Or is it really something that you have to begin when you're designing something to like start out with, okay, what are all the possible states, like you said, finite, and then create that, you know, with like a front-end React or Redux, or, you know, what are kind of the processes and approaches that you do?
So you may definitely be using state machines without knowing if you're using a library that, let's say, handles data fetching for you and is like returning the content or the loading state or the error state, but you don't have to interact with it. It just sends it to you and it's handled. So in that case, maybe you're using state machines that you don't know. Or if you have some kind of a system where, like, you know what, if you have a switch case, right, like a simple written switch case, like that's kind of in JavaScript, that would be the super naive, primitive implementation of a state machine. But ultimately, if you want to get serious with state machines, especially on the front end, but in general, you usually have to be deliberate. State machines, like this model, it's really old. Like, it's from the 20s. It's tried and true. So that's something that works. We know it works. But somehow it was a pattern that you saw in really cryptic, obscure backend, you know, like very advanced backend stacks. In the front end, that was not a thing. But that also makes sense because the front end started maturing only a couple years ago. Like, you were talking about the jQuery land that was really... We went, you know, from that phase, oh, yeah, the web is only a collection of documents and we are just styling documents, to, hey, let's build web apps in the browser. What a good idea. We have no tools to do it right, but let's do it. And so suddenly we're like, okay, let's reinvent everything. And so, no, maybe we don't have to reinvent everything. We can create new patterns. And that's why, like, you have things like React or Vue, like, they created awesome new patterns, like things that did not exist before. But they also rely on existing patterns, like React, for example, like the Flux model on top of which it's built. It's really similar to old MVC, which is from the 60s or 70s. But you also, like, you don't have to reinvent everything. At some point you realize, hey, there are people who did the hard work before I did, and maybe I can look at what they did. And so state machines are seeing some sort of a resurgence in front end, not only because it's an awesome model to represent state, and we can go deeper into what it looks like in general and in front end, but also because you have one library on the front end, which is basically the one that you should be using if you want to do state machines, that appeared a couple of years ago. So that that library is called XState. That's the most mature library that you may want to use if you want to use state machines on the front end. It was developed by David Korshid from Microsoft. And so David, I met David back in 2019 at .css. We're both presenting, and he was presenting XState and state machines in CSS, like how you can leverage state machines to make sure that you never have two conflicting classes on the same element. Like, hey, you have a button, it can be in success, it can be in error, but it cannot be in success and error at the same time.
Yeah.
And state machines, all of that. And so he was talking about crafting stateful styles using finite state machines. And it got me thinking, because I was like, I remember hearing about, you know, state machines when I was like studying some, computer science back then, or I heard that term at some point. And I'm like, okay, it seemed like an old boring thing. And actually it may be interesting. It may be cool. It may be useful. So XState definitely helped the front-end world realize that there is a pattern that may help us build much better UI state management.
Yeah, no, that makes total sense. Like CSS, UI, anything where you obviously need to have some type of priority, like you said, that it's not in error mode, it's not in pressed and unpressed mode at the same time for your CSS, whether it's colors, obviously that's connected to UI. Are there other use cases as well? I can imagine things like animation or other things where you need not, you need to be sure that like this is happening before this thing. So time-based elements, is there any other places where state machines are making people's lives easier or making a big splash or kind of opening up innovation in that way?
Yes, absolutely. Especially you were mentioning animation, like when you want to handle a user flow that has several steps and like different types of steps and you want to animate that, usually you're going to be at some point facing the fact that, oh, that is growing in terms of complexity. And so I remember at .css, so David was giving us the example of a password protected resource. And so like you have an input and a password, like an input to submit your password. And so when you submit it, it has to be validated on the server. So you could be displaying a loading state, you know, like a loading animation. And at that moment, you also cannot interact with the form. You cannot be hammering the button to say, hey, send it again and again. Like it needs to be stopped, like it needs to be disabled. And then like if the password is invalid, then your UI might go into an error state. So you want to do a transition between the loading state and the error state. And then maybe you're going to show like an error message, or you'll be outlining the input in red or something like that. But you will also be able to try again. So you have to unlock the UI. Then you start typing again. So you're going to move into, you're no longer in error. You're retyping something. So you need to remember you were in error, but now because the user started typing something new, I'm no longer in error mode. So you have to keep track of all that flow. And you may definitely be like, instead of doing complex animations on your end, just defining all the states and transitioning between each state. And that's the very core of state machines. And like state machines can be very complex, but at the core, you have like states, events, and transitions. And like you have all the states that a machine can be in. So a machine, when I say a machine can represent a radio, a password form, a printer, whatever. So a machine can be in many different states. Some of them are exclusive. Some of them are parallel. You can transition from one state to another, from states to other states. And this happens with events. So, okay, you are in loading states and you can have events that make you go from loading to loaded. So whenever you get this event, if you are in loading mode, then it goes to loaded. And all of that is modeled with state machines. So basically when you are interacting with state machines, when you're writing your state machines, you're kind of describing all the states that the machine can be with. And you're saying for each state, at least with XState, that's the way it's done. For each state that a machine can be with, you're going to say, okay, in this state, if I get this event, you're going to transition to that state. And this gives you something that's extremely visual, that is a lot easier to reason with than a bunch of if, else, switch cases.
Yeah, totally.
And the beauty is that you're going to have something that is declarative. You're going to have basically a big object with nodes, with names of states, on events, you go there. Right. And that's the declarative thing that you see. You can just read that and reason with it instead of reading some very imperative code where you're going to see if state equals that and the moon is in Mercury or whatever.
Yeah, exactly.
Go to that thing because like, and actually like that's very hard to read. That's also slow for computers to process, but that's very hard to read for the human mind to go in like nested ifs or else or whatever. You don't want to see that. And like, it's much more idiomatic in the front end, in the modern front end, when you're doing React or Vue, you have a declarative model. You're not mutating your DOM anymore. You're saying that this piece of DOM is showing if that variable is truly. Right. You're not saying when user clicks on this, delete that part of the DOM. You have a declarative model. And when you're using state machines, you are 100% applying this declarative mindset. So you're staying in the same paradigm. You're staying in that same mindset of, I declare how my UI should be behaving. I'm giving it some kind of a configuration. And then I'm letting React, Vue, Angular, the engine under it, figure it out. Figure out how to do it, how to transition with it, how to do all the heavy lifting. I'm leaving X state take that object and decide how to do things. But that's not something that you should be seeing on the front end. You should not be seeing the how on the front end, like at least in your source code. You don't want to see the how, you want to see the what.
Totally, totally. And you know, you're creating this finite system. Are people intimidated by that, where they're worried that it's not as iterative? You know, how easy is it to change sort of later on when you're like, oh, actually, I need to make this totally new UI structure? How easy do you feel that is? Are there any drawbacks in that way?
I would say that it could be complex depending on your initial code. It's always the same. Like if your state UI, I'm really talking about your UI state because we're talking about finite state. So it's not necessarily like where you put your users or your models or totally. Whatever, but it's really like your front end state, whether something is open, closed, etc. Depending on how you manage that already in your application, that could range from extremely easy to a freaking nightmare. Because, yeah. But that would be mostly due to your state hygiene. Like right. If you're leaking your state everywhere in your application, maybe if you have like some global state manager that is leaking everywhere in your application, if you have some very declarative code, if you're maybe circumventing the natural patterns of React or Vue, that could be complex. But I would say that it would be the same with any complex legacy code. The complexity would be in, to me, more of a on the human side. Like, are you willing to try something new? Are you willing to trust that thing and defer that part to it? From using it myself, I find it so freeing that I don't see why it would be complicated to make that choice. Arguably, though, you could say, okay, maybe a state machine, like, let's say I'm just, the use case I gave you, I'm loading users. I just have a loaded, blah, blah, blah. Especially if you're using an abstraction, like, I think React Query or SWR, they handle it for you. And chances are that they're using their own tiny finite state machine internally to make sure that things are okay. If you're doing that, yes, don't spawn a state machine just to do that. It may be overkill. But to me, that's always the same debate, is like, use what makes sense in your project, depending on the complexity, depending on the potential growth of the project, because that list of users, if you're 100% sure that it will forever stay that simple list of users, yeah, go the simple route. Don't add overhead. Don't add legacy. Don't add also maintenance for yourself. But if you know that this thing might grow, that it might become more complex, then maybe you want to start investing at some point into something better, or at least write your code in a way that will make it easy to switch later.
And what would be some suggestions in that? Like, if I'm not ready for a state machine, but I want to start preparing because my team is thinking of going that way, or we've decided to go that way in a couple months, what are some tips that I could start doing now?
So I would say one way that you could do it is to abstract away the logic of returning the states. If you're right now using React Query or whatever, try to encapsulate that logic into some abstraction that you call like a state manager or whatever. And you return the, like, for now it's Booleans, like it's handled the way it's handled, and you return that from your abstraction. This way, later you can switch to a state machine. So internally inside of that abstraction, you can have your state machine keep on sending the same states. So like it would be exactly the same thing. The only difference would be that it would be handled by a state machine. And you're consuming it from your abstraction on the front end. So your front end would not be changing, but the internals of your abstraction would be. And this way you don't have to use, like in a view, in a page, you would not have to import X state right away and create your machine, but you would go through an abstraction. So I would say, like, take the time just to maybe look a little bit at the documentation of X state or something else. Like, it's not the only library, but that's probably what you want to go with if you're doing JavaScript in the front end. Take maybe a little bit of time to look at the documentation, to just wrap your head around what it looks like, look at what you have, and maybe try to find the intersection that will allow you to create a lightweight abstraction to encapsulate your state and distribute it.
That's a great idea. And what kind of projects, if I'm like, okay, I want to start using state machines, I'm going to look at the projects that I'm working on, or I'm going to try, or maybe I'm a manager and I'm trying to decide which projects to implement this as our first test. What is the qualifications of a project that would make a good first test with a state machine? Obviously, I feel like most projects would benefit from it, but if I needed to decide and I wanted to pick one, what are some qualities that would be like, hey, if your project has this, this, and that, that's probably a good project to start trying state machines on?
So definitely anything that is a web application, something where you have a lot of interactions, where it looks a lot like a desktop application, like if you have a dashboard, if you have an editor, like I'm thinking of Contentful, for example, like you can do tons of things. You can open a panel, close it, open a list, you know, you can do a bunch of things. Go in dark mode, dark light, those are states that cannot happen at the same time. So anything that that is offering a rich array of interactions to the user are definitely good ideas. Like you may not want to do it with a website, that is mostly read-only, you know. Sure. Like if your documentation website has something like a dark mode, light mode, don't put a state machine there. Like yeah. That's probably a little bit overkill. You can probably test those Booleans really, really well, but don't go adding a state machine. But yeah, if you have a dashboard, I would say, or any application that is really rich in terms of interactions for the user, I would say, within that, try to find something very scoped that you can try it on. The sign up form or sign in for, like login form, can be a good one because it has a lot of interactions. Like you can be in many different states. You can be typing, not typing, loading, being validated on the server, error, but I fixed it, so don't show me that red anymore. No, there are many things like that, but it's very scoped. It's not going to leak into something else. So maybe before migrating all your data fetching logic to using state machine to handle the loading or loaded states, I would say pick something very scoped. Like, yeah, login form to me is a good one. That could be also things like the UI state regarding whether the panel is open. Like, yeah, let's say you have a sidebar that can open and close. You can migrate that. That's going to be very straightforward. But at this stage, I would say, because you're starting to include state machines in the very core of your application, you need to make sure that you're happy with it. Right. So start with something that is at the peripheral to your application, like a sign up form, a login form, anything that are Any modules at the gates of your application can be a good start, because you can use also the like in X state you have a library called FSM, so for finite state machine, which is a lightweight state machine with
less bells and whistles. So it's going to be smaller in terms of bundle. And you can probably start with that, with some module that is at the periphery of what your application is. And then as you decide, well, I think it's nice, I think we could definitely benefit from it, then you can probably get inside of the core.
That's really great tips. And for people who want to learn more, what are some great educational resources or, you know, obviously, jumping into X State and looking at that documentation would be helpful. What other places do you feel like are really doing it well that people can kind of jump off of this podcast and start really diving deeper?
All right. So three things. First, X State documentation. It's awesome. It's really well written. There is a killer feature to me in the X State documentation is that you can basically copy paste your machine. Like you, let's say you wrote a machine in JavaScript. You can paste the code because it's declarative and X State is going to model it with something like a visual representation. I don't know how it calls it again. Let me check. It is called, okay. You can cut that out.
Now I want to look at it too.
All right. Yeah. I don't remember. I need to check how it's called again.
That's great.
Visualizer. It's called the visualizer.
Oh yeah, so you, right here.
Yeah, you can basically paste your JavaScript code and it's going to represent your state machine with like buttons that you can click so you can trigger events. And so to me, the absolute beauty of that is that it makes you think declaratively. And that's actually something like when you think about it, flows, like user flows. The closest thing that they are, like the closest thing to a user flow, it's not code, it's not what, it's a flow chart, you know,
totally,
a decision chart.
Totally.
Who writes flow charts? Not developers, product managers do, you know?
Yeah.
And that means that actually you could better collaborate with your PM. You could probably even have your PM validate your flowcharts or maybe even design them. I know that I did a podcast with David a couple months ago on State Machines on a Vue podcast. And so he talked about the fact that there is an idea of pushing the visualizer so that it's accessible in design tools or so like give a way for non-technical people to build state machines, like define state machines visually.
Totally.
And I think this is awesome because you can have so much better collaboration with your product manager, your product designer, who are not people who want to write code, but they are the ones who know what should be the flow between this and this and that. And so imagine if you had an integration between like Sketch or Figma and X State, where you could basically define the entire user flow and you could output from that a state machine already written. And you as the developer, you get the state machine. All you have to do is make sure that everything is clean. You can review it, but that makes collaboration much better. And even without all those tools right now, what you can do is like basically go on the visualizer, input your code, send the link to your PM or your product designer and tell them, okay, play with it. Tell me if I got it right. Instead of, you know, being like, oh, wait for the site to build and you will see, you will have to go through all of 500 steps to go to the login form. Like you can actually try that thing. So, to go back to your initial question, the X State documentation is a really great way to understand state machines because like David did a huge amount of work into understanding the model, into studying it, and then modelizing it for JavaScript. So he explains a lot of things, a lot of concepts. X State, I think, is in V5 or maybe now V6. Since then, but like it went through five major iterations. So you know that it comes with, it's full featured, it's mature and it's full featured. So you can understand a lot about state machines without necessarily going on to Wikipedia, especially if you're a front-end developer and you don't necessarily want to go into math concepts. You can definitely learn what you need to know by reading the X state documentation. Now, that's the first step. If you're a Vue developer and you want to understand state machines better, I have two recommendations. First, you can go on my website, on my blog. So my blog is frontstuff.io. And currently, like at the moment where we are speaking, I have my latest blog post is using state machines in Vue.js with XState.
Nice.
And so basically, I lead you through the process of building a markdown editor in state machines. With state machines. And so I give you like basically what you need at the moment when you need it. So when we are going through each step and we present new problems. Okay, now I want to do this. How can I do it? I cannot from what I know, but here that new feature. So it's a cool introduction to state machines. If you are a Vue developer, that can help you a lot by writing a project from scratch. And finally, again, if you're a Vue developer, I will be giving a talk. So in Vue Toronto, so of course it's going to be online,
nice.
But the 2020 edition of Vue Toronto is going to happen between the 4th and 6th of November of this year. And I will be giving a talk on how to use finite state machines in Vue 3 with the composition API. So
awesome.
The event is free. So you can register right now. If you want to see state machines in the context of Vue 3 with the composition API, I will be doing a presentation, which is going to be 90% of the presentation is going to be a live code. So
nice.
You can follow along. You can code at the same time. I will give you the source at the end of the talk. So that can be very useful. Even if you're not a Vue developer, you can understand a lot. Even like you will see a code that does not necessarily apply to your day-to-day, but it's still going to give you an idea of, okay, this is when I need nested states. This is when I need parallel states. This is a good use case for a conditional state, et cetera, et cetera. By re-implementing that markdown editor, this is what we're going to do, but we're going to push it a little further. We're going to do some cool stuff. Definitely if you're interested, come to VueConf Toronto online on the 4th to 6th of November.
That's wonderful. And I'll put all of these links in the podcast. So when you check out this episode, you can check out all of these awesome, you know, documentation and tutorials. And I really hope everyone can go and listen to your talk at Vue Toronto. That's really exciting. And it's wonderful that it's free. And I love that so many conferences are online and free nowadays. I'm just like, oh, I'm overloading on conferences, but I love it. So I'm really glad. And thanks for doing that and sharing all of your knowledge with us. Is there anything else you'd like to share with people before we wrap up? Because I feel like you gave a really good, compelling overview of why we should think about state machines, how we can get started, what is a good scope. I'm just in love with this visualizer. I can already start thinking of how useful this would be talking to UX researchers, talking to other people on my team. I could take a napkin sketch of a user flow and put it right in here. I mean, it's really exciting. So thank you for that. Is there anything else you'd like to share with us about state machines on the front end?
I would say that's more of a, for a final note, I would say try to keep an open mind. Like it can be
my dog barking.
Yeah, hello.
Hello, dog. He's trying to keep an open mind. He's clearly, he doesn't know. But yeah, keeping an open mind.
Yeah, keeping an open mind, because like that can be tempting on the front end right now to think, oh, all those old patterns, solid, whatever, they're things from the past, they're old, let's move on to something cooler and newer, it does not apply to us. Sometimes it's true, and sometimes you have to learn to build your own patterns and invent some new things. But like I would say, do not throw the baby with the bathwater. There are some really interesting patterns that were invented a while ago. This pattern is a very, very interesting one. There are many people who get interested in it right now, like the X State opened that gate and now people are discovering it. The reason why you may have not seen it can be just because it was not in the community, was not in the culture, but not because it's old means that it's not good. And you can always get better. You can always make your project better. There are things that you don't yet know. And like, if someone was telling you about state machines as if it was something new, maybe you would love them. So I would say, yeah, keep an open mind. The beauty of it is that it really gives you a framework to properly think about, you know, state, the concept of state. And on top of that, like, you get the reliability of decades of mathematical formalism. And that's something like, it's for free. Somebody did it before you. Like, I don't want to think about that. I don't want to think about making sure that something cannot be in two states at a time. That's not innovation. That's infrastructure work. And this is not where your added value is. Your added value is an innovation, innovating on your product, not setting the basics or, you know, the foundations. That's not where you should be spending your time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, thank you so much for being on this second edition. I'm so glad we got to have you back as a guest and really go deep into this topic, which I'm very excited to continue to learn more about. Thank you so much for joining us on the Algolia and Contempl DreamStacks podcast. And thank you so much for your time. I hope you have an incredible week. And thanks for chatting with me and teaching me so much about state machines.
Well, thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure. I'd love to come back again. It's always really fun. I hope you have a great week.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I really appreciate it. All right. Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of DreamStacks, the developer podcast that feeds your mind and your soul. We hope you enjoyed it. Let's stay in touch. You can subscribe to DreamStacks in your favorite podcast app. Don't hesitate to follow Contentful and Algolia on Twitter to get access to our latest news. See you soon!